Okay, I guess we'll look at these couple of verses that were kind of, were assigned to me to talk about on the qualifications of a pastor. The ones that were assigned to me were in 1 Timothy 3, 6, and 7. I think we'll turn to that, and I'm going to read that verse 6 here. It says, "Not in novice, lest being lifted up with pride, he fall into condemnation of the devil." I knew this assignment was, I was to talk about this for a while already, and I guess I was kind of wondering why this verse was given to me about a novice. I mean, it's simple. It's somebody that's new. I mean, what am I going to speak about on that verse? And the more I thought about it over the last couple of weeks, I think the more that verse stands out to me than the following one. It's like, what is a novice? It's someone new to the job. And why is that so important that he's talking about somebody new? Why shouldn't this role be replaced on someone that's new? Because if this responsibility, we need to have someone that is mature and stable, someone that has learned that he is nothing without God, someone who is humble. And I guess the more I thought about it, I don't think he's talking so much to make sure that we don't have someone that's new. I think he's looking at something a lot deeper here. He's looking at, we don't want to place this responsibility on someone that is easily puffed up, that is proudful, gets a big head on him because he thinks he has a top of the line job or something like that. And I look at it too, a person that is humble, that is a person that wants to serve. He looks out for others, and he's not looking out just for himself. And it's like, and a young person typically tends to, I mean, they may be scared, but yes, they tend to get kind of a big head on it. Your pride comes out, and we see even that in workplaces. If you give a young person some lot of responsibilities at a job somewhere, and they kind of start to become arrogant. They just think they know it all. It's really hard to talk to them and bring out a different point. And that's how I think we have leaders that tend to be proudful. They think they have all the answers. It's very difficult to really get close to them or have a connection with them. And then I kind of was wondering too a little bit about, then it talks about how it talks about there in the last, he fell into condemnation of the devil. And I just, I guess I was kind of wondering what he's talking about. Then I was just kind of thinking, I looked at different translations, and it kind of gives you the picture that if we have an elder that's proud, boastful, God's going to deal to him the same as he dealt with Satan. Satan, we all know that Satan was cast out of heaven because of pride. And God has no pleasure in pride whatsoever. I mean, pride wrecks the church. And how Satan was proud like that, he was trying to wreck heaven too, but God didn't allow that. He threw him out. So I kind of feel like this verse is not talking so much about someone being young as someone that tends to be arrogant. To make sure we don't get someone ordained an elder that tends to have the problem of being arrogant. And if you look at James 4:6, it says, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. I mean, right there we have it, that God hates pride. And with this, I had to kind of think of a situation, and I knew a church where this man came in. I wouldn't say he was exactly a new believer, but he was new to the community. I mean, this man could speak well. A lot of people thought highly of him because as soon as he came into the area, he was never ordained as a pastor, but he was given the responsibilities, a lot of responsibilities in church. I mean, I don't remember exactly what all. I know he was on the school board. He was on the Sunday school teacher. I think maybe he was a trustee. But this was a fellow that nobody really knew a whole lot about him, knew his background. And this, he could speak very well. He was learned. He knew his scripture. But if you'd go talk to him, he seemed like he always had something negative to say about somebody. It just kind of run him down. And I seen this thing, how this unfolded. I mean, he divided the church. He split the church. I mean, the church, he caused a lot of issues there. I mean, and he even one time told me, he said, he's not afraid to talk to anybody because he can out-talk them. And to me, that's what I see here. We do not want an arrogant person to have this responsibility, and God doesn't either, because God will deal with him. Okay, then I'll look at verse 7. Talks about a good report of them that are without. It says, moreover, we must have a good report of them which are without, lest we fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. And there is the good report of them that were without. How do people in the community look at us? Do our daily lives match what we say? In other words, do we walk the talk? I know Sundays it's pretty easy sometimes, you make and say the right things, the right time, but how do people look at us that are not believers? Do they know us for someone that always wants the best deal or the most money for everything we have to sell? Or do they know us as someone that always shakes everything down and gives more than they even bargained for? Do they know us as somebody that's always working, always extremely busy? Or do they know us as someone that always has time to help them? I know that's something that in our culture I see is that something that could be better. It seems like you ask somebody, how are you? Oh, I'm busy. I'm extremely busy. I mean, does God really want us always be so busy we don't have time for others? Are always in a hurry. We come to the parts house or wherever, we run inside, grab what we want, hurry, go out the door. Got to drive fast to get there on time. Or we think it's on time, we don't even know why. I mean, people are watching us. Do you always have a look on our face like the world's about to come to an end? Or do we look at we have peace? I mean, these are just some things that people are noticing about us. People read us way more than we ever think. You know, is like the way we live our lives will either pull those outside closer or push them further away. And that's a challenge for me. Do I live my life in a way that people can see that I have something that they want? Or do they look at us as somebody that's just in a hurry, their life's no better than mine, they're just always in a rat race? And with that, yet I think of Matthew 5 or 16, it says, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." And I think that should be our desire, that we can live our lives that it brings glory to our Father which is in heaven. And I do, it was good for me to kind of look over these qualifications. I mean, think about in the last couple of weeks, and it was a little bit off, maybe a little side note there, but when I read over these and thought about and was studying on these, there's something that kind of stood out. Here's these qualifications. And in these qualifications, I do not find one place that we shouldn't ordain somebody because this man don't think quite like I do. He might have some different thoughts. Or he's from this certain family line. And I know that's, I guess over the years I've heard this already, that, well, this man, we don't want him in here because his last name is the same as this. And I think that's wrong. I mean, if this man has the qualifications that is listed here, what does it matter what his last name is? I mean, that's just a little side note. Some things I've heard already over the years, and it's just like, we need to look what God wants and not what we want. That's all I have.
All right, thank you, Alfie, for those thoughts. That was good, enjoyed that. I was assigned 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 3 and 4. Verse 3, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, but not covetous. All right, so the first one is not covetous. Now, I looked this up. It says, covetous is having or showing a great desire to possess something belonging to someone else. Having or showing a strong desire for especially material possessions. Covetous implies inordinate desire often of another's possessions. Example would be casting covetous eyes on your neighbor's fields. Now in the Bible there's a number of examples. We'll look at one especially this morning, and that is from the 1 Kings chapter 21. This was a story where one man coveted another man's fields. And turn, if you don't have to turn there, I'll read it. 1 Kings chapter 21, 1 through 19. And it came to pass these things, And it came to pass after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard which was in Jezreel next to the palace of Ahab king of Samaria. So Ahab spoke to Naboth, saying, "Give me your vineyard that I may have it for a vegetable garden, because it is near next to my house, and for it I will give you a vineyard better than it. Or if it seems good to you, I will give you its worth in money." But Naboth said to Ahab, The Lord forbid that I should give the inheritance of my father to you. So Ahab went into the house, sullen and displeased because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he had said, I will not give you the inheritance of my fathers. And he may lay down on his bed and he laid down on his bed and turned away his face and would not eat food. But Jezebel, his wife, came to him and said to him, why is your spirit so sullen that you eat no food? He said to her, because I spoke to Naboth the Jezreelite and said to him, give me your vineyard for money, or else, if it pleases you, I will give you another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give you my vineyard. Then Jezebel, his wife, said to him, you now exercise authority over Israel. Arise, eat food, and let your heart be cheerful. I will give you the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. And she wrote letters in Ahab's name, sealed them with his seal, and sent the letters to the elders and the nobles who were dwelling in the city with Naboth. She wrote in the letter, saying, proclaim a fast and seek Naboth and his with high honor among the people, and seek two men, scoundrels, before him to bear witness against him, saying, you have blasphemed God and the king. Then take him out and stone him that he may die. So the men of his city, the elders and nobles who were inhabitants of the city, did as Jezebel had sent to them, as it was written in the letters which she had sent to them. They proclaimed a fast and seated Naboth with the high honor among the people. And the two men scoundrels came in and sat before him, and the scoundrels witnessed against him, against Naboth, in the presence of the people, saying, Naboth has blasphemed God and the king. Then they took him outside the city and stoned him with stones so that he died. Then they sent to Jezebel, saying, Naboth has been stoned and is dead. And it came to pass, when Jezebel heard that Naboth had been stoned and was dead, that Jezebel said to Ahab, arise, take possession of the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite, which he refused to give you for money, for Naboth is not alive but dead. So it was, when Ahab heard that Naboth was dead, that Ahab got up and went down to take possession of the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. All right, so here we have a story that illustrates what covetousness is. And if we keep reading, then we find out that, yes, he did get the vineyard, but later on he was punished. Ahab's wife and Ahab for what they did. And so I don't know if that's always the result of our covetousness, that we're punished in this life, but ultimately we would be punished if it was done in a covetous way, in desiring something and taking away from somebody else. There's also stories, different ones, and we won't go over all these, but David had Uriah killed. David coveted Uriah's wife, Bathsheba, and went so far as having Uriah killed. Initially, he didn't want to do that. He wanted to take other steps to push Uriah away, but ultimately, he had Uriah. Uriah was killed because he wanted Bathsheba. And then we had the Achan. He coveted the Babylonian garments, which he wasn't supposed to do. He wasn't supposed to take them, but he did, and that ended up in his death. Not only his death, but then the death of all the family, probably his wife, or maybe his, I don't know if he would have had more than one, possibly, and then the children of all the family were killed because of his covetousness. So covetousness in a person often extends further than just the person. It involves others. And a person who has a tendency towards covetousness, then the children also might pick up on that. And they become that way too. So it's just not a one person, but it can involve many, many more. And then there was another one, Gehazi, if you remember him, the greed of Gehazi, where he was also involved with covetousness from 2 Kings chapter 5, it talks about him. Joshua 7 was Achan, and 2 Samuel chapter 11 was David. All those men were involved in some type of covetousness. Now, I will say that I've never heard anybody in the Mennonite church ever say, confess to covetousness. Have you? I don't know. I've never heard it. The reason why is that what we want, we get in American society. What we want, we get. If we see a truck out there and we covet his truck, or we covet his farm, or we covet this, or we covet that, well, we can get it. How? Easy credit. Easy credit. Borrowing. Monthly payments. 30-year mortgage. Friendly banker. We can declare bankruptcy and go out again and do what we want. So, we get what we want. And so I've never really, there could be, some of us here are covetous, have a tendency that way, I don't know, because I never hear it. I've never heard anybody say it. And there could be somebody who is racked by this kind of problem. Maybe somebody here has something that you want, or there's something I have that, maybe somebody covets my car. Well, you can have it. I don't care. I mean, I don't know. It's just something we don't deal with. But there is something. There is a covetousness that goes on, but it's not material possessions. And I've seen this, and this has devastating effects on churches and on individuals, and that we covet another person's gifts, church gifts, abilities, we covet it. We see that gift that person has is getting him somewhere. He's moving ahead, and we're still here in the dust, but he's moved ahead because of the gift and his abilities, and so we covet it. That I've seen. I've never seen it confessed, but I see the results of it. And I have two stories. Both involve people's names. I cannot use them. But I've seen that. The one was, this happened 45, 50 years ago. One man had the gift of working with people. He was a people person. He had a construction business. So people gravitated towards him. If they wanted a house built, they went to him. He was just a humble, broken type of man. He was a pastor, and everybody liked him in the church, and they liked him in his construction business, and so he got the contracts. He built spec houses, and people bought them. If they went to him for a house, he would build it. He did a good job, fair price. And there was another man in the church, and his ways were a little more brash and abrupt, and so he didn't get the contracts. So this man over here was building houses, and people, and so much more money involved there. The other man was doing pole barns, and a rougher type of work. And anyway, so the one got jealous. The one building pole barns, he wanted to build houses. He wanted to be like the other guy. He wanted to get ahead. So he got into the house building business, and he didn't know his stuff. He wasn't good at it. He bid, and so the first house, he bid too low. But he wanted the house because he wanted to be like the other guy who's doing good. And that, I remember I helped him on that house, and he lost money. I remember his wife told me, his wife told me, said, my husband worked all summer for nothing. I still remember it. He worked all summer for nothing. Well, I worked for him. I almost got nothing, but I did better than him. And so their covetousness can play out in that type of way. Just not just material possessions. That's the danger. So in choosing a leader, again, it's not something that's confessed or opened or is too visible, because we get what we want in American society. One thing I could say, choosing a person, what type, maybe it would be good if we could talk to the banker of all of those of you who have borrowed money. Maybe that would be good. Then we could find out what kind of type of person you are by talking to the banker. If we have the one who's being considered, we go to the banker. How's he doing? Well, he's falling behind on his loan again. He's not making his payments. We're having trouble. That's a warning. Anyway, that's one. And then another one was, this was a devastating one. This was two leaders. The one leader, again, had the gift with people. He was a people person. People liked him. Everybody gravitated towards this leader. The other, he was just a people person. Everybody just, at the end of the service, everybody was just around him. The other one was, he just wasn't that way. And so people didn't gravitate to him, but both were leaders. The one who didn't have the attention, he became jealous of the one who didn't, and started to find fault with him, his wife, and his family, and started to spread that in the church. And to make a long story short, eventually the church split in half. It just split in half. Because of that one man, as I observed, he became jealous of the one who had the attention. All right, we'll leave that on that one. On that note, what covetousness is and what it can do. Now this one ruleth, let's go to verse, we'll go back to Timothy here. First Timothy back there again. First Timothy chapter 3, verse 4. One who ruleth his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. Woo! How have we done? How have we done? This is where a congregation, this is where they use the microscope on a leader. They used the microscope. When we were in Belize, the microscope was on us. It was trained on us. And when we're considering a man to be a church leader, we will focus on those children. Yep. We're focusing on them. And we'll focus on the one who's chosen, and when they're in, we'll continue to focus on them. And if they mess up, there's a lot of pressure. Sad. One who ruleth his own house well. Now I have a we may think a father who is stern, strict, like a drill sergeant. All the children walk the line and keep the rules. Okay, so is that what we're looking at? Looking for? They walk the line. Keep the rules. Maybe a little. But I'd rather see in a leader, I'd rather see this. Treats all his children the same. There's no favorites in the home. And I don't know if you've seen homes where the mother treated one child different, or the father treated one son different, or I don't know. I've seen homes like that. And I see the sad results 10, 20, 30 years later. So in looking at a leader, future leader, it's a father who treats all the children the same. There's not one favorite amongst them. There's not, the mother's not treating one son better than the others. That's very important. Is firm but fair with all the children. Is firm but fair with all the children. Ruleth his own house. Well, his own house. He's firm but fair with all the children. Will be the first to ask his children forgiveness if he wrongs them. Or sometimes it happens that you hear there's something happens in the home. You remember, fathers, those of us older ones, okay? So there was a problem. There was some problem, and we ended up disciplining the wrong one. You did that? We did. I did, probably. I disciplined the wrong one. Jerry, did I do it? Yes. I disciplined the wrong one. We had five. There, something came up. Maybe we said something harshly to one, but it wasn't him, it was the other one. Do we just let that go? Oh, well, forget it. No. We go back and say sorry to that son or daughter. I disciplined you wrongly. I'm sorry. I didn't know. I thought it was this you, but it wasn't you. I'm at fault. We tell them. That's the type of leader we want. That type of leader who's fair with the children. He's the first one to say, I'm sorry to the children if he wronged them wrongly. This is the big one. Will not talk trash about other people in front of his children. Will not talk trash. Will not talk against the leader in front of his children. In his family. 10, 20, 30 years later, watch those children where the father talked trash about somebody. You see the results down the road. Will not stick up for his children when they are in the wrong. Find a leader, a potential leader, who will not stick up for his children when they are in the wrong. The way the father treats his children will be the way he treats his members later, church members. We had a situation, a very sad one. I observed this was a situation where school is a good place. Another place to find out about a person is talk to the school board. Talk to the school board and find out what parent respects the school and what parent doesn't. And if there's a parent, a father that doesn't respect the school board or the decisions or the teacher, Don't choose him.
Yes.
And if there's, and so that's just a good one to do. Maybe we should have, we should talk to the school board before we decide. We say, we may think, I don't know who to choose. Talk to the school board and find out. Then you might give you some idea. We had a situation like that some years ago. There was a situation where a family, they were, okay, here's the deal. We had a school truck. It wasn't a school bus. A school truck went around picking up children in the community. I think they still do it. Been doing it for years. And the problem was the driver's driving, and there was a truck. And so then you had the students were in the back. And the driver could not see back there what's going on. So you got a bunch of rowdy boys. I don't know if Jerry was involved in this. Probably. Maybe he did. I don't think he did. I'll stick up with him. But actually, this happened before he was. Yeah. So the boys were giving a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. The school bus driver had to stop. He had to go back there and say, okay, behave yourself, boys. You know, that didn't work. He'd go back and drive and on and on and on and on. Finally, I think it was brought to the parents. Finally, the rule was made that if whoever it is will not obey and will not listen to the rules in the school truck, I mean, it was dangerous. The back of the truck was open. They were going over rough roads. It was dangerous, just dangerous. And so the rule was made, any child that continually disobeys the rules will be let off the bus and walks home. So that everybody knew it, parents knew it, everybody knew it. So sure enough, this one boy who consistently was a troublemaker, the bus stopped, truck stopped, he was ordered off the bus, and he had to walk home. Let's call it maybe a half mile. Half mile. So good for the bus driver. He did his job. He kept the rules. Everybody's good. When the boy got home, walking home, the mother said, What do you where's the school truck? How'd you get home? Well, I was taken off the bus. I didn't do anything wrong. They just took me off the bus. Man, that mother, she went berserk. She got upset. She got angry. She scolded that poor bus driver, humiliated him in front of others. And so now, what happened? Now, years later, the results of that are coming to roost. The results have come to roost. The mother disrespected authority. She disrespected the rules. She should have punished her son when he got home. That's what my wife would have done. Yeah. She would have punished me. Well, yeah. Or one of us. If we broke the rules, if we did and didn't keep it, we would have got it. But not that boy. He was, oh, you poor boy, you had to walk home. And now years later, that man, now he's a man. Now he's having issues in his home, in his life. Because how the mother and father treated him as a younger boy, and how they never respected the authority themselves. So those types of things will has lasting repercussions. In Colossians chapter 3, it says this, in the New Living Translation, fathers, do not aggravate your children or they will become discouraged. And in the Living Bible, it says, fathers, don't scold your children so much that they become discouraged and quit trying. Just some added fuel here. All right. I think that's enough said on that. Yeah, it's time to quit. All right, thank you. We'll turn it back over to Kevin. What? Pray? Okay. Let's pray. Father God, thank you for your instructions to us, and help us as we discern the one that would be best suited and meets these qualifications, or is trying to meet these qualifications, has a desire to meet these qualifications, we could say, and prepare him for this job, a difficult job, and he might be, prepare him in, to be a broken, humble person, desiring to do your will in his life. Thank you again for each one, and help us this Lord's Day and this coming week. Amen.